The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. For the most comprehensive industry news and information, visit our website at irei.com and sign up for our free daily news alerts.
Welcome to the program. Our guest is Philip Ashley Klein, the man who spearheads Deloitte's art and finance practice in the United States and works globally with family offices, private banks, wealth and asset managers, hedge funds, and art business ventures. Mr. Klein is here to discuss the results of Deloitte's 2017 Art and Finance Report, which estimated that $1.6 trillion in art and collectible wealth is being held right now by the ultra wealthy around the world. And that number is forecast to grow to $2.6 trillion within a decade. The 272-page report was unveiled this month, November, at the 10th Deloitte Art and Finance Conference in Milan, Italy. And it contains key information about trends and developments in the art and finance industry. Philip Ashley Klein joins us by phone from New York City. Philip, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks so much for having me. Excited for the discussion.
Yeah, you know, really interesting stuff. I mean, I think people just are intrinsically interested in art. Tell us about, you know, what the report is based on in terms of the number of respondents and the makeup of those respondents.
Absolutely. Yeah, it could be helpful. I give a little context first just around the purpose for the report and what we really mean by art and finance.
Sure.
And in terms of art, I mean, it's really more broad, right? It's art and collectibles, or often called passion assets or tangible assets. And then finance is really the financial aspects of the market, but also the business aspects as well. And we're really proponents of bringing together these three areas of the market around the cultural sector, so museums, collectors, the business sector. So that's really around selling art, the new digital startups and the technology evolution we have in the market, and then the financial sector as well. So this is like the wealth managers, family offices, this is insurance and funds. And we sit at the nexus of these three areas, and we really try and help to drive and monitor the convergence. So how the market's performing, the development of services, both wealth management and business services in this nexus, and how technology is disrupting paradigms in this market, is compressing fees and opening new market opportunities. And we also explore issues around transparency, provenance, protection. And this report, we've had 6 years now, and this is the fifth edition. And this year is actually very exciting because we've got our most, well, definitely our most comprehensive, as you said, nearly 300 pages, and I think most compelling as well, as we brought together findings from the last 4 years and compared them to this year also. And like you said, it's all driven by hard data. So we spend a very good amount of energy on surveys, recognizing it's a global study as well. So we survey 69 private banks, 27 family offices, 155 art professionals, 107 major art collectors. And these are collectors from the Middle East, Latin America, Europe, the U.S. And also we have multiple experts as well contributing, who are authorities on multiple aspects of the market. So as you said, it's around 300 pages, and it's often referred to as many as the Bible of the art market, so I do suggest a read.
Well, so you're looking at, in just 10 years, a $1 trillion increase is the forecast. What's driving the rise in art investing? Why are more people committing investment dollars to art and collectibles?
Yeah, I think that's right. There's a rise in the allocation of wealth to art and collectibles. And some of our studies, one statistic that tells us, which we've been focusing on throughout the years, is collectors buying for emotional reasons, but that they focus on the investment value. So that's now up to 86% of collectors we see. They buy for the aesthetics, but they focus on the investment value. I think there's a myriad of drivers. There's drivers within the financial sector, it's kind of financial arena, and emotional as well. So, in terms of financial, you have this notion of art as an asset class, and people see it as a way to seek alpha. They see it as in an uncertain an economic environment with a lot of geopolitical uncertainty. They see it as a protector of value. They see it as a diversification play. I mean, there's a lot of studies where there's less correlation between art and classic assets. So I think diversification is key. As well, like, people see a lot of these headliner prices, which is really at the ultra top end of the market. But people obviously get the allure of these headliner prices and historically very big returns in the market. And then this is congruent with really the financialization of the market as a whole. And then you have, like, individuals who really think about it more emotionally and less around the financial aspect. So I think this is the third time since the launch of the survey, 85% of art professionals said that social value was the main motivation around art collectors. So this, we have to remember, it's not just a financial product, right? This is a lifestyle product. This is a lifestyle investment. I mean, this provides social value. Throughout history, people have collected art to increase their social standing or social value. And this is true particularly at the ultra-high end of the market and these so-called trophy hunters who are going after, you know, these big contemporary pieces, the biggest ticket, the highest quality, the highest seminal works from the most in-demand artists. So I think, you know, when you kind of combine all these factors together around, you know, protector of value, seeking alpha, and then the emotional aspects of this as well, I mean, you kind of have this perfect storm of why we're seeing more allocation to art.
Well, and, you know, you make the point about passion, the real love of art, and it brings cachet. There's no question that if you have a home where you've got originals of, say, Rubens or Degas, that it's quite impressive, whether it be in an office place or in a person's home. I want to read you a recent headline that ran in the world's newspapers, and it reads like this: Leonardo da Vinci painting sells for $450 million at auction, smashing records. Subhead says Christie sells long-lost Salvatore Mundi artwork. What's your take on that gigantic sale? What does that tell you about the art market?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, very relevant, very, very interesting. I think, you know, some would say that it's indicative of where prices could go. I think, you know, when you see, you know, record-breaking prices at this level, I think there's definitely a mindset shift. But I think this is very unique. I mean, this is somewhat of an anomaly in the market. I mean, we're talking about Leonardo da Vinci. We're talking about less than 20 of his works in existence. The only one that was in private hands, and whether it's still in private hands, we don't know yet. It could have been bought by a cultural institution. But what really, like, drives the economic value of art is the cultural significance and the social value. I mean, here you have Leonardo da Vinci. You know, he's really a part of a whole civilization. You have this amazing story behind the work, you know, commissioned by royalty, owned by multiple royal families, and then you have it tangled up in headline disputes between a Russian oligarch and a prominent Swiss art advisor. So it's really Hollywood blockbuster stuff in terms of the story, and really like great stories sell great paintings. So I think, you know, it's somewhat of an anomaly, but I think very interesting, and a very good job by Christie's, I mean, as well, creating a lot of value from it just through really marvel marketing to sell the painting.
You mentioned diversification, and I'm just wondering if you, in this report, whether the report actually talks about what percentage of portfolios among the ultra-wealthy, what percentage goes to art and collectibles. Is it gravitating? It sounds like it's gravitating upward, but do you have any kind of percentages that you guys were able to put to it?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of allocation, I think in terms of the U.S., we probably see around 10% of wealth is allocated to art and collectibles. And I mean, and there's a variant as well globally. I mean, you would see probably a higher allocation around like Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, probably near a 20% allocated to what I would call like passion assets. So, I mean, in like the Middle East, it's probably allocated more around jewels, precious metals. I think in the US and UK, there's more of an allocation towards art and even art antique furniture. So there's a real variation between like where we see different geographic regions and their allocation to these passion assets, and then the type of assets themselves. I mean, and then even within, if you look at fine art itself and then the genres of that, so contemporary art, and this is really what gets the newspaper headlines, right, and the major prices. I mean, you talked about the Leonardo, right? I mean, the Leonardo is an old master, but it was still featured in the contemporary sale. Why was it featured in contemporary? I mean, this is really the battleground of the billionaires. I mean, this is where they go, so this is where they put the painting. I mean, you have the American hedge fund owners, you have Russian oligarchs, sovereign wealth funds, new Chinese wealth. I mean, this is where they battle for the rarest works, the most seminal quality from the most in-demand artists.
Well, and part of your answer really leads into my next question, which is what constitutes art and collectibles, the type that are being purchased for investment right now? And are the majority, with respect to art, are you seeing mostly paintings or sculptures or pottery? And then with collectibles, you mentioned antiques, classic automobiles or furniture, antique furniture. Can you flesh this out a little bit for us, Philip?
Yeah, so I think it goes back to the point where I think it varies geographically. But I think what's really interesting at the moment is you're seeing particularly the auction houses recognizing that they're being more buyer-centric. So I think it's less around the material or the type of work, and it's more around, like, how significant is that work to society? How influential is it? So you saw at Sotheby's last Thursday, they had the Michael Schumacher's 2001 Formula One Ferrari from the Monaco win within a fine art contemporary sale. Like, why is that? Because buyers want the most scarce, the most seminal works, and the most culturally and socially significant items that they can. Like, these are the trophies. So I think it's less around, like, do we see different types of work? But, like, the question is, like, where do we really see the demand? And the demand is this, it's the trophies. So whether it's a sculpture, whether it's a Ferrari, whether it's an old master, I mean, that's really where the market's going.
So what type of value appreciation have art investments, art and collectibles been experiencing, generally speaking? Because obviously there's been a lot of price inflation on art. So investors are seeing what kind of escalation in the value of what they invest in?
Yeah, it's a good question. Again, I think you can look at the market as a whole, and then you can look at particular, like, sectors or works. I think, you know, it's very analog to the stock market as a whole, right? You can say, is the stock market as a whole performing well? Are particular sectors like technology performing better? And then particular companies within that. So, you know, if you look at the art market, there are, like, indices within genres. So if you looked overall, you would see a long-term positive annual performance trend, like, in every indice and every genre. If you look at, say, Impressionism and Old Masters, you would have lower performance, and that's known as a slowing sector. But these two sectors are known and viewed as a protector of value or more of a safe haven category, similar to, like, your bonds or your treasuries. So I think it's important that art is seen as both, you know, its potential for high investment returns, but it's also seen as a real reservoir or protector of value. So if you look at contemporary art, even Chinese or Chinese contemporary art, I mean, a 15-year CAGR there is for Chinese contemporaries around 14%. Global contemporary art is around 9% on a 15-year CAGR. So you can see higher returns here. However, like your high-risk tech stocks, you've got a riskier market, more dynamic. I mean, this is a market where you have living artists as well, which have a major impact. And as well within that, you have the big ticket items and the major items that you see with the headline prices. These are the ones that are really driving the overall growth within this sector.
What is the typical hold period for art investments? I would imagine they're pretty long, but what do you find in terms of how long a person will hold on to a piece of art or a collectible?
Yes, I think it varies broadly, right? I mean, you can have from one end of the spectrum a completely pure flip. So you have, say, an art dealer who has an individual who wants to buy particular types of Picasso, and they know one's coming available. So they buy, flip it, and they take the spread. I mean, you have then two individuals who want to build a collection, right? So You know, the general consensus is that if you have a collection that is coherent, it has a good story and theme around it, that the whole is worth more than the sum of the parts. So you have individuals that will build a collection over decades, potentially. And while they're building that, they'll still sell particular pieces and buy as they form the collection over the years. What we see probably more is less around like how long you think about holding it and circumstances which drive you to sell. So there's a lot of talk of the three D's: debt, divorce, and death. And this is these are the main reasons that end up driving sales. So you may be collecting for your lifetime, and then it comes to the point where you think about estate planning, or you pass on. And that's when, you know, your heirs may decide that they want to put the works to sale. They don't want to inherit. I mean, it could be divorce where you need to create liquidity for that reason, or debt as well. So these are actually the big reasons that we see that works end up coming for sale. Like, the other thing I think is interesting here is art funds. So just like you have a financial fund that would invest in classic assets, you have funds that invest in tangible assets. So, you know, from a fund I knew in Europe that invests in collectible cars, to there's multiple global funds that invest in fine art. So the typical hold period you would see there is probably around eight years hold period. Some of that is because investors have to lock up their capital because it's a close-ended fund for the amount of time. But generally, like around an eight-year period, it's typically quite good for if you want to buy, hold, and deaccession, then 8 years is somewhat of like a typical range.
So this is the fifth edition of the report that Deloitte has put together on global art and collectible investing. So, and you mentioned that this one, because you've had years under the belt now, shows some changes along the way. What kind of What has changed over the course of the 5 years that you guys have put this report together? What do you see trending, other than obviously more investing in art and collectibles? Are there some other trends within that you would cite?
Yes, I think when we started the report, there was this almost fixation on art investment and thinking about how that market's developed. So the way we thought about that was, in the future, you would have investment indices in art. You could create exchange-traded funds off of the back of that. But the way things have actually evolved over the years is this movement into managing the wealth allocated to art and collectibles. So less around like how do you create a great return, but how do you manage that wealth? So some of that could be art-secured lending. So that's actually using your art as collateral to be able to create liquidity. Then there's the estate planning around. I think we had a statistic in the report, which was wealth managers said only 22% of their clients have an estate plan. So the estate plan around that, I mean, building their legacy, that could be creating a private museum around their art as well. So there's all these aspects around like protecting and preserving wealth and creating liquidity out of that as well, out of the art that you own. I mean, we've had this major study around wealth management, and that I think is very exciting because we've now seen real evidence that there's a major trend of wealth managers who believe art and collectibles should be part of the wealth management offering. I mean, it shot up last year to 78%, and then we now see 88% this year. So I think that's major, and you know, a lot of drivers there from wealth managers who recognize that they need to create more value for their clients, they need to differentiate themselves in a more intense environment. And it's collectors as well who in a more uncertain environment, they really want to be able to leverage their full strength of their balance sheet. And the full strength of their balance sheet is not only their classic assets and real estate, it's their art as well. There's many collectors that have, you know, proportionally more than 10% of their wealth allocated to luxury assets. So they want to be able to really understand holistically their wealth portfolio and how they can employ that into all the different goals that they want in their lives. Just one other point, because I think we often talk about kind of what's changing and how things are trending either up or down. But I think what's very important as well is things that haven't changed. And what we haven't seen change is transparency and regulation. So you have this art market, which is unregulated, juxtaposed to this financial sector, which is heavily regulated. And The fact that there's less transparency in this art market is really one of the major barriers or challenges for why we haven't seen the type of acceleration in services that we would like to see. I think once this is overcome, then we'll really start to see these types of investment products that I talked about, like having art investment indices and exchange traded funds.
Does the report indicate, I mean, you've already talked a bit about national differences or geographic differences. Does the report indicate what part of the world, whether it be Asia, Europe, North America, or maybe a particular country, where the art investor investing going on there, art and collectible investing, is especially high or leads the world?
Yeah, I mean, you have the three major markets in the world, right, which is led by the US and New York, and then London and China following suit. But this, I mean, this is a truly global market, right? So I think there's a couple of ways to look at it. It's kind of who's buying the art and then where the art's coming from as well. I mean, in terms of who's buying the art, I mean, we spoke about that a little. So you have, you know, the new Chinese wealthy, you have the Russian oligarchs, Middle East, I think, you know, the financiers in the US, these are the big collectors. I mean, you just have to look at the Forbes 100 rich list. There's many, many there, right? These are the big billionaires. And this is at the ultra high end of the market. And that's the focus for, I think, most of this discussion. But there's also a mass market for art collecting as well. And then, like we talked about, there's this whole social value element to art. So throughout the ages, collecting fine arts increase your social standing, and we have a lot of new wealth in China, right? And they're seeking out this social value and this social standing by buying a lot of this this art, which has influenced our culture and history. And then I think what's really interesting is this major infrastructure transformation that's occurring in the Middle East, in China and elsewhere. So in the Middle East, you have them investing billions in cultural infrastructure. So they've built the Sister Louvre in Abu Dhabi. There's some of the really big name galleries, US galleries, global galleries are moving into that market. And then you have the auction houses setting up shop there as well. You know, I think auctions in the region last year saw an 11% growth, where globally we actually saw a downturn in the market. So as well as this this new infrastructure, what I think we're seeing as well is collectors really broadening their aperture around the types of works they're buying. I think they're looking to seek value elsewhere, given there's so much scarcity in the markets, and the markets are becoming mature where they are. So we're seeing a real emergence in African art, in Southeast Asian art, and even Latin art. So we're seeing real growth in these markets, in the artists producing the work, in these countries and cities in these countries developing their infrastructure, their cultural infrastructure. So there's almost a convergence outside these regions of these who are seeking new passengers of wealth, and those in the regions who are becoming more wealthy themselves, and they want to build up this cultural infrastructure because they recognize the social value and cultural value that comes from building this infrastructure and allocating their wealth to luxury goods.
You know, we talk about infrastructure all the time here, but we don't talk about cultural infrastructure. Very interesting that you bring that point up. So, Philip, give me two or three of the report's findings that we have not already covered that stand out to you.
Yeah, I think for me, and I have somewhat of a digital background as well as financial, so I think a couple that really stand out to me is this whole development of digital technology and analytics in the market, like we're seeing elsewhere in financial services and other industries more broadly. But you have, for example, Instagram as a platform in the art market, social media broadly as a platform, and it's a platform for art industry professionals. So galleries, art fairs, everywhere that you would think of buying or viewing art, being able to now market and publicize how they're doing that, it gives a window for even wealth managers into that world so they can see what's happening in art fairs and galleries all over the world. And then you almost have it disintermediating the artist gallery paradigm. So typically artists will go through galleries to sell their works, but now artists can market directly to consumers all over the world through social media like Instagram. The other interesting trend, I think, is around analytics. I think this one's even bigger. And we're seeing a real influx of venture capital coming into the art market. And these are venture capital and private equity that you would typically see investing in financial startups, but they're investing in art market startups. I think in 2015, there was half a billion that represented half of all the investment in the decade before. So we're seeing a real tremendous growth in investment in art market startups, and primarily in data and analytics companies. So this is, for to give an example, this could be a company that can answer questions for you, like where and when should I sell my piece to create the most value, or where should I exhibit it before to help create the most value, and then where can I sell it to get the best price. So you can really like data mine similar works, the artists, and you can see where they exhibited, which were the best museums they exhibited that then created the best prices, which auction house, in which season, in which part of the world got the best price. So you can now really mine like thousands and thousands of data points to really help you now create even more value out of work that out of art and collectibles that you're investing in.
Interesting. Our guest has been Philip Ashley Klein. He is the guy who spearheads Deloitte's art and finance practice in the United States. And we've been discussing Deloitte's 2017 Art and Finance Report, which, again, those astounding statistics, the ultra wealthy have $1.6 trillion in art and collectible wealth. And that is forecasted to grow to $2.6 trillion just in a decade. Philip, really interesting discussion. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.